Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, Episode 16A, Concord, the North Bridge. We started our war last week, and I'm very excited about it. Our first shots are fired in anger for the American Revolution, and they're fired at Lexington, where 8 Minutemen are killed. Now, Concord was already abuzz since Samuel Prescott arrived and warned them of the impending British attack. The supplies were being dispersed, and the Minutemen were assembling. The Minutemen were now put on high alert because a runner from that direction says how the British opened fire on the Minutemen as they were protecting their homes. So the Concord Minutemen have no idea what to do and what the British are going to be up to. The Concord Minutemen field two companies, and they also had a third from Lincoln, about 250 men. Now, companies that we're going to talk about are going to be two different sizes, so I want you to understand the difference in sizes. For the British Army, a company was about 30 men. Usually 28 is the magic number, but I'm going to make easy math for everyone. Just say about 30, because you want to include officers as well. But for the colonial militia and the Minutemen, companies were usually based off of towns. If a town was too big, they would field multiple companies, but a town like Lexington, their company was 77 men. So the differences in unit size is really going to be something that we're going to talk about repeatedly throughout the course of the podcast, just because the British Army is a formal organized army, and the American Army and the future Continental Army are going to be a little bit differently, where their units are based usually from the state you're from and where you live, whereas the British Army has standard regiments, companies, so on and so forth. Commanded by Colonel James Barrett, the Concord militia would field about 250 men to meet Lieutenant Colonel Smith and his 700 redcoats. Now, the town of Lexington was built on a flat plain, which is why we see the type of fighting that we see at Lexington. But Concord is built in a hilly terrain. The town kind of ebbs and flows as the hills go. So the advantage was wholly on the militia and the Minutemen. See, as the British got closer to the town, the Minutemen would go from one hill to the next, slowly retreating and displacing and reforming on the next hill as they got closer and closer to town. Now, the British were always under the watchful eye of the Minutemen and were at high alert as they entered in Concord. But the Minutemen do a curious thing. They actually leave the town to the British, probably not wanting to take an open fight within the town, nor have an open fight with line of battle outside the town. So they displace and head across the North Bridge towards the area of the Barrett Farm. Hint, hint, that has something to do with our colonel in charge. So Lieutenant Colonel Smith sends one company of light infantry to the South Bridge, and he sends seven companies of light infantry to the North Bridge. He then sets his 10 companies or so of grenadiers to work, searching the town, looking for powder, shot, arms, cannon, food supplies, anything like that. I'm sure they were thoroughly lectured about conduct of the light troops at Lexington. So the grenadiers began searching the town as carefully as possible, as to not upset the locals nor scare them. They will actually miss as many supplies as they actually found, because they didn't want to upset the locals, they weren't coming at them hard. So that local men like Timothy Wheeler could actually hide flour that was meant for the Patriots in plain sight and is able to trick the British by telling them the truth. Now, I know everyone's scratching their head. How do you hide something in plain sight that is meant for the Patriots that the British are there to destroy and tell the truth about it and not get it destroyed? Well, he did something very interesting. He strategically placed his own bags of flour, wheat, rye, etc. among the others, And when the British Grenadiers came in, he pointed at his bags and said, no, this is my bag of flour, my bag of wheat, my bag of rye, and so on and so on. Convinced that the bags were actually the farmers, the British let it go. But nonetheless, any cannons that were found were destroyed. Muskets were thrown in the river. Flour, tools, carriages, all burned. The morning in Concord for Smith was actually going pretty uneventful. The British soldiers were finding supplies, destroying the supplies. No locals were harmed. No one was angry. Everything seemed to be going according to plan. I mean, the worst part was that the troops took it upon themselves to liberate some food from the townsfolk so that they could have a nice breakfast. Pitcairn himself actually goes to a local tavern with some other officers, orders a breakfast, has his breakfast with his officers, and promptly pays the man. So the British were actually going through the town pretty peacefully and were causing no disruptions. Let's face it, the local folk were none too pleased to have British army searching around their town looking for Patriot supplies, but hey, they're not causing any bodily harm to the locals, so it could be worse. Now, I just want to take a second and remind everyone that Lieutenant Colonel Smith was the commanding officer of this expedition. And the reason I bring that up is because he decided to stay in town while the search was being conducted. Now, that doesn't seem like such a big deal. But the part that interests me is he kept Pitcairn, who is his second-in-command, at his side. Now, the light troops had already proved themselves to be impetuous, so why would Smith not either himself take command at Northbridge, or at the very least send Pitcairn? Nope. Command went to Captain Parsons of the 10th Regiment of Foot. He was given command of the 7 companies at the Northbridge, about 196 men in all. Now, 200 men to hold the bridge doesn't seem like that big a deal, and, you know, it would be foolish for the Minutemen to attack the Northbridge because it's a very tight area and you're giving the British soldiers a whole lot of room to work with. But Parsons had other orders. Besides holding the bridge, he would also have to search the Barrett farm, which was just about 2 miles from the bridge. So Captain Parsons has 7 companies. He's going to take 4 of them to go off to search the Barrett farm. So he's going to take a little over 100 men with him. He left 3 companies under the command of Captain Lorry to stay at the bridge. Now, as we discussed earlier, there was about 250 Minutemen that had just crossed the North Bridge to go to the other side of the Concord River to wait out and see what the British were going to do. So this move of splitting the force is actually watched by the colonial Minutemen, and the British realize that. So Captain Lorry crosses his men over the bridge, and they stay just over the bridge to await and make sure that Captain Parsons gets back safely. At the same time, he sends word to Smith that he's vastly outnumbered. What they don't realize right away is that the colonial numbers have swelled to over 400 Minutemen, so more companies from surrounding towns have arrived. But nonetheless, Lorry sends word to Smith, and a company of Grenadiers is dispatched to give him aid. Now, the Minutemen are watching all of this. They see Parsons leave with 4 companies. They see the 3 remaining companies, which are on their side of the river. They actually cross to set up a defensive position on the what we're going to call provincial side of the Concord River. So they cross the river. There's only 3 companies. And what they don't realize is that the American ranks have swelled to over 400. Barrett now is in command of 6 companies of Minutemen. Besides the 2 Concord and the 1 Lincoln Company, a company from Bedford, Acton, and Carlisle all arrive to aid the Concord militia. So we have now 6 companies under 1 commander. This is actually an interesting little side note. This was the first American army under a single unified commander to ever take the field. Now, you're going to ask yourself, well, what about the French and Indian War? Yes, there was, Americans fighting in that. Well, of course there was. But what people don't realize is that those Americans were fighting under a militia company or a provincial company or, even a provincial regiment, I should say. They were fighting for the British Army, but they were their own separate, they might have been their own separate command, but there wasn't a American army and a British army fighting the French and the Indians. It was the British army, and they had provincials in their army. Just like we fight the British army, there are loyalist companies and regiments that fight against the Americans. They're loyalists, so they attribute themselves as Brits. So for the first time in American history, we will have a unified American army, the 400 or so men that it was, take the field against a British regular army. Very unique little side note to history there. So let's review. Parsons is on his way to the Barrett farm. He's out of the picture. Laurie is on the provincial side of the river with his 80 or 90 or so men that he has to face off with Colonel Barrett and six companies, which is over 400 Minutemen, that are now going to be bearing down on him because they see the smoke rising from Concord. They don't realize that Colonel Smith is burning supplies. They think that Colonel Smith is burning the town. And they make the decision that they're going to march across that river, they're going to retake the town, and they're going to put out the fires. Laurie sees the Americans coming down, and he realizes that his position on their side of the river is unattainable. So what does he do? He crosses the river. And he's going to set up defensive position at the other end of the bridge, a way for them to bottleneck, and he can kind of even out his numbers. The other thing that he does is he also starts ripping up boards. He starts ripping up the boards of the bridge so that it makes it more difficult for them to cross. But they can't fully destroy the bridge, because if they fully destroy the bridge, you leave Captain Parsons and 100 or so light infantrymen trapped on the wrong side of the river. Barrett, riding at the rear of this large force of 400 men, is giving out the orders as the Minutemen march. Do not fire unless you're fired upon. The Americans do not want to be the aggressors that start the war. The British have already started this fight, but they are still not going to open fire on them until they are fired upon first. Laurie also prepares for a tactical retreat. He actually sets his men in what is known as street firing. What you do is you take your soldiers, however many there are, and set them into ranks no more than 8 deep. So that as your first rank fires, it retreats behind the last rank, and then the second rank fires, retreats behind the first rank, and so on and so forth. It keeps a continuous motion. It's almost like Indian running. If anyone is a sports person ever was told by their coach to do an Indian run, you would jog around the track. The last person alive would have to race to the front. And then when he got to the front, the last person would race up. It's the same thing, just in reverse. The whole purpose was is that you can kept a continuous rate of fire. And this way, Laurie was set up for a retreat, because he knew that unless a miracle that Parsons could come back, he was probably going to have to retreat in the face of 400 Minutemen. There was no way that his number could hold them off long enough for Parsons and Smith to both come back to reinforce him at the bridge. The Minutemen are closing in on the bridge, and Barrett is again and again repeating the orders, do not fire unless fired upon. He wants to remind his men he does not want to start this aggressive fight. He wants to get to Concord, put out the fires, and make sure the town is protected, and Smith is sent packing, going back to Boston. But when the Minutemen are within 50 to 60 yards, Laurie gives the order to fire. The first volley that the British will send the Minutemen's way will actually kill two, including Captain Davis of the Acton Company, and wound several more. Major Buttrick, the second in command under Colonel Barrett, gives the order, and the Minutemen unleash a volley that was more of a shock and awe than this destructive thing that ripped through the ranks. Two men are killed, with also several more wounded. And the British have gotten the idea that the Minutemen are there for a fight, and they're ready for one. And they immediately turn and run for Concord. Any British return volley after the Minutemen's first shots at them was ineffective and sporadic. The British were on a full sprint back to town. They actually get halfway to town when they run into Lieutenant Colonel Smith, who was bringing a company of grenadiers to support them. The Minutemen were actually not giving chase, so the British were relieved for a moment. This is going to become a common theme as we continue on talking about the American Revolution. The militia kind of just disappear in the middle of a fight. The Minutemen had the advantage. They had crossed the bridge. They had sent three companies of British light infantry running. The colonel, who was in command of the British, is returning with said light infantry and a company of grenadiers as they all go racing back to Concord to regroup and join with the other units. So Barrett holds the advantage, and he possibly could take the town because he's already shocked the British into a point where they are just totally caught off guard. But, as militia units do, they think for themselves, and they recross the bridge. So thus ends the short but glorious career of Colonel James Barrett, the first commander of an American army to ever take the field. This is a little bit of a morbid anecdote, but a wounded soldier who was wounded at the North Bridge is actually trying to crawl back, and a local boy actually hatchets him in the head. The man kind of lays there for a little while, but dies nonetheless. Now, the reason that this is a morbid anecdote and why it's kind of interesting is that when Parsons returns, he saw the outcome. He knew nothing of what happened at Northbridge. The militia had dispersed. The British light infantry that was left there had returned to Concord. All he sees is a few dead provincials and some dead British regulars. And then they see the wounded man that got hatcheted in the head. It actually sends rumors ripping through the British ranks when Parsons returns to Concord, because he swears that the Americans are scalping the British dead. This is wholly incorrect, but it is actually an interesting little anecdote because that just adds to this voracity of these Minutemen and why the British need to return to Boston, because these Minutemen are taking no prisoners and they're scalping people. That's enough to scare even the hardiest of soldiers. And Colonel Smith does decide that he has completed his mission. They've destroyed a fair amount of supplies. He believes that they've completed the mission that General Gage laid before them. And so it's time for the British soldiers to return to Boston. That's going to be the second part of the Concord story that we're going to talk about next week. It is actually going to be the last episode for the year. Yes, next week will be my last episode for the year, as we're getting very close to Christmas time. And I'm a giant child, and I love enjoying the Christmas season, and I love getting my Christmas presents. So we're going to finish up with Concord, and that will be it for this year. So next week is the retreat. We're going to discuss both sides, what was going through the British heads, what was going through the colonial heads, as the British try and get themselves back to Boston in whatever peace they can, because they are being torn to pieces by the Minutemen as they chase them all the way back to Boston. Now, the recommendation this week is actually a book that I'm currently reading. It's called The Road to Concord: How Four Stolen Cannon Ignited the Revolutionary War, by J.L. Bell. Now, what I can say about this book is that it actually takes an interesting stance covering the whole view of what the stolen cannons from the British Army and how both sides are scrambling to gather powdering cannons for what they believe is an upcoming war. The book is pretty good. I enjoy it. It's definitely for more the hardcore historian. It can be rather wordy, a lot of primary source material, but it's definitely worth a read if you really want to cover all sections of Lexington and Concord. If you're a hardliner like me and enjoys reading all kinds of books about the American Revolution, this is definitely worth the time. That'll do it for this week. Like I said, we're going to return next week when we talk about the retreat from Concord. As always, have a great week and keep your powder dry.